Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Anonymous Show, where we go beyond the blog to bring you the best the medical blogosphere has to offer, and tonight is no exception. I am, of course, Dr. Anonymous. You can find me at dranonymous.com. Our phone number tonight is 646-716-9514. Today is Thursday, January 17th, 2008. It is 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Here in the Buckeye State, it is cloudy, 33 degrees Fahrenheit, 1 degree Celsius. Our guest tonight will be joining us in a few minutes is Kevin MD, arguably the most recognized med blogger out there. You can find him at kevinmd.com. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio for featuring the show again. Tonight, meaning that this show is on the front page of the Blog Talk Radio website. Thanks again to Blog Talk Radio for featuring the show tonight, and welcome to those of you who are joining us on the show for the first time tonight. And I just want to say hello to the chat room. We have six people in the chat room. Hello, chat room. Our guest is in there. Dr. Val is in there. Grunt Doc is in there. Emergency M, and we have a guest in there. So thank you for joining us tonight. Just want to plug a couple of things before we bring our guest on. Sunday night is going to be a special edition of the Dr. Anonymous Show, Sunday, January 20th, 2008 at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. We're going to be kind of following up on last week. We talked about the MedGadget MedBlog Awards. We're kind of brainstorming for that long two-hour show last week. Thank you for anybody who listened to the show or even listened to the entire show. But one of the ideas that came up was that we were going to have a show on the night of the deadline of the voting for the MedGadget Awards. So the show will be coming on at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Voting will be over, I believe, at midnight Pacific Time, so you can do the math on that. Nick Jeans and Enrica will be coming back, and we may be having some other guests. So we'll see how that show goes. Next week in this time slot will be Dr. West. You can find him at drwest.blogspot.com, so that should be an enjoyable interview there. And 2 weeks from now, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I'm going to be on a plane coming back home in this time slot, so I'm not sure what I'm going to be doing there. I may actually pre-tape a show. We're going to be doing some things with that, so I'll see what I'm going to be doing with that. Coming up later, maybe in the next few weeks, is Sid Schwab from Surgeon's Blog. I think he's a little bit mad at me because when I did my video blog about the blog about the MedBlog Awards, I didn't mention him. So he left a little comment on my blog today. Maybe it was in jest, but maybe check that out. And TBTAM, the blog that ate Manhattan, will be coming in to the show as well. And as you can see on my Blog Talk Radio site, that I am trying to do Ustream.tv again, and I'm going to try to turn this camera on. I encourage you, if you are trying to listen to the Ustream, that you turn down and mute the Ustream audio, because you're going to get a lot of echo from the Blog Talk site and from the Ustream site. So let me try to turn this on right now and see if people can actually see me and hear me. So, in the beginning of the show, the reason why there was like 10 seconds at silence in the beginning of the show was that I did have a little bit of a glitch. I had different music set up. Last week, I did have a major glitch. So we'll see if that can that happens this time. So our guest is Kevin MD, and before I bring him on here, I just want to say before I bring him on that he's been a blog mentor of mine, and I've been very appreciative of that. And it's been when you're a med blogger and you get that email from Kevin that you're going to be put on his blog roll, that is one of the special things that I remember, because I my little blog here, just kind of blogging about things, and then you get an email from Kevin that you're gonna be put on the blog roll. So that was a very special time for me. So I did want to say that before I brought him on the show here. So let me see here if I have all my technical glitches. Hopefully it is nothing's gonna happen here. And let me try to bring Kevin on the show. Now, joining the show will be Kevin MD from KevinMD.com, and we'll see if I click this and see if he's on here. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Dr. A. How are you doing?
Hey, how you doing? Thank you for being on the show.
I appreciate it, and thank you for the kind words. The check's in the mail.
Great. Let's just start by just talking about you are a general internal medicine physician, correct?
Yes, I am.
Why don't you talk a little bit about how you came to pick your specialty, and why did you want to do general internal medicine?
Well, I was in the midst of my internal medicine residency in Boston, and you know, I was undecided as to what I wanted to do afterwards. You know, I thought that I probably, you know, wanted to specialize, go into GI or cardiology, and what I did is this. I took a few years to think about it and do some primary care in between. And let me tell you, that's what I'm still doing. So essentially, I like my practice that I was in, and that was 5 years ago. And I can't think of going back to school and doing fellowship hours. I'm pretty happy with what I'm doing, believe it or not, despite what I say on my blog. and I think that that's how I came to be. So general internal medicine it is, and I'm doing primary care here in Nashua.
Great. And, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm in primary care, too. I'm in family practice, and just a little plug for the generalists out there. I think, you know, every person, especially in the United States, even around the world, you should have a primary care physician that should be the person that you should really try to navigate through this, at least in the United States, this complicated medical system. I have people talk to me all the time and say, well, I can go to this specialist and that specialist, and they can take care of all of my needs. But I think, you know, that the generalists, the primary care physicians, you know, America needs us, and I think we need to get that message out more.
Absolutely, and I'm totally with you there. And you know that New England Journal study where they took a look at the Medicare patients and how many doctors on average they saw, and I think that over a course of the year, the average Medicare recipient saw 7 doctors, 2 primary care physicians, and 5 specialists. And I think that's an unfortunate trend. So I do my best to promote primary care medicine on my blog.
Oh, sure. And is there, and I know you and I have read those studies too, that primary care done the right way actually saves the healthcare system money. But I don't want to go down that road, but I think you and I are in agreement with that.
Absolutely. And I think you're going to see a lot more from me on that track.
So how long have you been up there in New Hampshire? Is that where you were born and grew up there, or did you end up there in another way? Or
I was actually born in the States, but I grew up in Canada and did high school there, and then I came back to Boston University for undergrad, medical school, and residency. And I do like Boston, but I didn't like the housing prices and whatnot. So Nashville, New Hampshire is about 45 minutes north of Boston, and had reasonable housing prices, is nice suburban living, nice place to raise a family, but still pretty accessible to Boston and restaurants and all the cultural activities. And when I was younger, I would have never imagined that I'd be in New Hampshire, but here I am, and I think it's a great place to live. And so far, pretty happy, and pretty happy with where I work and what I do here.
Oh, great. So you're a Red Sox fan, I would presume, then.
You know, I grew up in Toronto, so I was more of a Blue Jays fan, but now being here, you know, can't help but to be a Red Sox fan and a Patriots fan. You know, it's a city of winners. What do you expect?
Why don't you tell us about your practice setup there. Are you in a group? Are you by yourself? Or do you go to the hospital, or you don't go to the hospital? How is that?
I'm with four other docs, and three family physicians and two internists, and we all do adult primary care. Recently, about a year ago, our hospitalists thankfully got hospitalists, so I actually don't do much hospital work anymore. Back when I was a resident, I used to moonlight like crazy and do a lot of hospital work, urgent care stuff. But right now, I'm pretty focused on primary care and adult medicine, and I do that 5 days a week. And it has its problems, has a lot of areas where it can improve, and I'm with a pretty good group up at the National Medical Group, and it took a good couple of years to really kind of learn outpatient medicine, because as you can imagine, they don't really focus on outpatient medicine in residency. So I felt much more comfortable, you know, treating an acute MI than I did a rash. But now, after 5 years kind of doing primary care, definitely more comfortable with it, and I think I'll probably be continuing this for a while.
Oh, good. I know with family practice training, that's more geared towards outpatient, and that's a little bit different as far as the training scenario. Let me ask you this. So as far as internal medicine training, then that is, you know, for my listeners out there who don't know, is that really geared more towards inpatient patient care?
I think so. When I trained 5 years ago, it was anyway. I don't know about now, but internal medicine, you can do a primary care tract where you can do more outpatient clinics, or you could do more of a what's called a categorical tract where you're kind of geared more towards hospitalist work or doing an internal medicine subspecialty. I was in a primary care track, but even so, the majority of the training was still hospital-based, and I still, coming out of residency, felt much more comfortable in the hospital than I did in a clinic setting.
Great. Before we start talking about your blog, I did want to acknowledge some more of the people in the chat room. We have 11 people in there now. We have Headmirror in there now. We have Bongi, who is all the way from South Africa, so it's early morning, Friday morning over there. We have Scanman, who is from India, who is tuning in. I believe it's early morning there, too. Adam Greenfield and another guest in there. So, and Ramona is in there, so thank you for joining us on the show tonight. Now, let's shift gears here and talk about your blog. Now, some bloggers that I've talked to, especially med bloggers, they have previous experience in writing as far as writing either academic articles or journals or maybe doing some newspaper articles or even television or radio work. Did you have any previous experience with that before you started your blog?
I haven't, actually. I think the blog was really my first exposure to writing and writing more extended pieces. I don't do that as much anymore. I think when I first started off, I started off with more original pieces, and then now over the past few years is kind of going towards the more insta-pundit style, link-style blogging, and then I intersperse some original pieces occasionally. You know, some of the other bloggers write really long, you know, these great pieces. I don't know where they find the time to do that.
Yeah.
You know, doing primary care like 5 days a week, and I barely have time to read everything, and yet alone write, you know, huge pieces. I just can't keep up with that. So now I do a more link blogging style now, and it's actually not that much more work than, you know, than just reading my normal journals and blogs every day. But it's really given me a lot of opportunities to write opinion pieces. I wrote an op-ed at the New Hampshire Union Leader, and you know, I think I have a couple of more op-eds on the way, and I think that it's really given me practice, and it's given me the experience and opportunities to write, and I think that's something I'm pretty grateful for, because it really gives a good change of pace from seeing patients and allows me to, you know, communicate my views, communicate opinions to the public, and make them aware of things that us as doctors really are struggling with today.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I started blogging a year and a half ago, I did have a little bit longer pieces then, and as I've gotten more busier or less time, or I've gotten a lot shorter, but I definitely agree with you. I appreciate you know, all the people out there who have different styles, especially the longer styles or shorter styles, and it's a lot to take in, and I've really enjoyed being part of the community. Now, what year did you start reading blogs?
Yeah, I started reading blogs. I think it was back either in 2003 or 2004. I started my blog in May of 2004, so it was probably 6 to 12 months before that. And some of the original bloggers that I read, like Grunt Doc, like Med Pundit, Chris Rangel, Robert Center's blog over at DB's Medical Rants, those were the first few blogs that I read. And they would always give their take and opinion on medical news. And I thought to myself, you know, that's a great idea, and I can do it myself. And that's when I started on Blogger, and I kind of dipped my toe into the blogging water, so to speak, and it's kind of steamrolled since. And I think that it does fill an important place. I think that a lot of, as you know, mainstream media reported medical news is missing a physician's perspective. You know, they go for that 20 to 30 second soundbite, and it misses a lot of nuance. And I think that's where physician blogs can come in and give that more informed opinion that's missing on TV and the newspaper.
Did you always do current events blogging on your blog, or did it change at all during the midst of your blogging?
I think at first I did a little bit more things with patients and talked about cases and was more clinical. I think I've gotten away from that over the past couple years. I've made a conscious decision not to blog about patients or my work or personal experiences, just because I don't want patients, when they see me, I don't want them to wonder if I'm blogging about them, and I just wanted to remove that from the table. And I know that over the past few years, HIPAA concerns and privacy concerns are one of the issues that that physician bloggers are facing, and I just wanted to remove that. That being said, I know a lot of other great blogs talk about patient experiences, and they're fantastic and interesting reading, but I've gotten away from that just because I didn't want to put myself at risk, because I know other bloggers, as you know, and have gotten into trouble by writing about patients. So I think now what you see is more current event medical blogging, kind of link blogging, so to speak, and sometimes I'll write some opinion pieces, you know, based on, you know, the struggles that primary care face, reimbursement, and you know, some political news, especially in this political cycle, healthcare is such in the forefront.
Did any of your patients find your blog when you were blogging about patients?
No, I think that I took some of them down, because I think you know, after the whole Flea Robert Lindemann thing, I took some posts down. So I think a lot of patients found me because my blog was profiled in a lot of the local newspapers, and you know, they thought, "Oh, cool, this, you know, Dr. Poe is runs a blog, and what's a blog? And basically, I think it made me appear like a more internet savvy physician. I think that appeals to a certain demographic, specifically the younger demographic. And my practice did grow because people found me either through Google or reading about me in a newspaper, because they wanted a doctor who was comfortable with the internet. And I think having a blog definitely gave that impression.
Now, something that's of interest to me is anonymous blogging, which is kind of doesn't make sense now because I put my face out there now and I have video blogs and that type of thing. But when you started your blog, was there any thought of just not using your name, putting your name on the blog?
No, I think I wanted to start with my real name out there, because I think it does lend a certain air of credibility to the blog and puts a face to the opinion. I think it's also a way to temper my opinion, because if you're anonymous, I think it removes that filter, and you could kind of go too far sometimes. And of course, some of the bloggers would say that's a strength, but I chose to go with my real name, and just mainly because I think it lends an air of credibility, and people can say that's a real doctor who's writing the blog.
Do you have any regrets using your real name on your blog?
No, I don't. I think that people now associate me as a physician blogger, and it's actually helped me grow my practice. It's especially around here. Everyone, all my colleagues, and pretty much the Southern New Hampshire community know that I blog, and it's gotten some mainstream attention as well, and I don't think I would have received that if I blogged anonymously.
That's interesting. It's kind of a marketing tool, maybe using a little bit as saying, well, hey, this is who I am, and these are my opinions, and you can see that I'm a physician advocate, I'm a patient advocate, and this is how I can show my patients that I'm doing that.
No, exactly, and that is definitely one of the ways I use my blog, is to not so much to market myself, but really to get my name out there and build an online reputation, because sooner or later every patient is going to be on Google. They're going to Google the doctor, and I think that if you have a good, online reputation, I think that's just going to help you more in the future as one builds their practice.
Now, when you started writing and when you started blogging, when did it start hitting you that your blog was growing, or that you really had something special kind of going on? Was it real early, or did it take 6 months, 8 months, a year before you really started noticing?
Well, I don't know if I have anything, special, so to speak. Like, I'm still, amazed that people would care about what I say. But, I think after the first couple years, I think looking at the comments, back a couple years ago, that's when I knew that I had something. Because whenever I talked about things like real polarizing topics, like malpractice, defensive medicine, and physician salaries, stuff that really polarizes people. Back when I let the comments fly and I stopped I didn't moderate them, people would just go back and forth, and you'd have 30, 40, 50 comments, and really, getting these personal attacks and swearing and real passion and vitriol. And and I think that I gauged the popularity block by the comments. And back in the heyday of the comments, there's less comments now because I moderate. Really, every time I post, and there'll be so much passion behind that. And I like stoking that debate, because I think the more that people talk about these issues, I think the more that it gets out there, and the more that it's in people's awareness, I think that closer that someone can get something done about them. So I think after 1 to 2 years and started getting more popular, and I think really the comments is was the best indicator of that.
How long have you been moderating your comments now?
It's been a struggle about what to do about the comments. At first, when I started blogging, I thought blogs should be completely free, completely unmoderated, completely open, because that was the strength of the blog, to really convey opinion instantly. When people started swearing and using personal attacks and really kind of going too far, it was hard for me to find the right way to rein them back in. I'd start by deleting comments, I'd start. And another idea I do would be to not post anonymous comments. I think eventually it came to a point where, you know, I spent too much of my time deleting comments and kind of filtering them and going through. So unfortunately, right now I moderate comments. It's just the easiest way. And I've been doing that for about 6 months now.
Yeah, I mean, a question that I get all the time, and probably a question that you get all the time, is, I mean, maybe about a year ago, I had some posts that people didn't like, and people really started coming after me, not only in the comments, but in emails. Some of them would be anonymous emails. Some of them would put a name there. I don't know if it would be their real name.
I'm sorry to hear that. That's I definitely could see why it could be discouraging.
Yeah, and I get that question all the time. How do you deal with even like negative or vitriolic emails that you get?
Well, I think to put yourself out there to blog, you got to have pretty thick skin to begin with. If you're the sensitive type and easily offended, then really blogging isn't for you. I take what people say, especially if they're negative. I accept criticism. I understand there's going to be a subset of the population that's not going to agree with what I say. And, and that's fine. But I think what you got to realize is that this is your blog. You got to stay in control of it. You can't let it get taken over into comments. And what you say goes. And if people don't like that, they could either choose not to read that or start their own blog. But I think the biggest thing is that if you let the comments get to you, or if you try to adjust the blog too much to cater to the commenters, I've learned that it's probably not the best way to run a blog. You got to have a pretty thick skin and do what's best for you and your blog and really not worry too much about some of the more antagonistic commenters.
If you're just joining us, we are joined by Kevin MD at kevinmd.com. The phone number here is 646-716-9514. And give us a call. Say hello. And if you have a question for Kevin, give us a call. Let me move into something else that I get asked about a lot as well is like sponsorship and monetization. And I know that's something that is used a lot on your blog. What was kind of the decision-making process as far as, did you want to do this? Is this something that you actively sought out, or did people just started contacting you, emailing you, and saying, I want to sponsor or be a part of your blog?
Yeah, that topic certainly comes up a lot. I think it started about a couple years ago. I think there was, I don't remember which company, I think it was Advanced MD. They came to me and I think MedPundit as well and asked if they can put a little banner on my blog. And at that time, I didn't really think about it too much. And then the more I thought about it, the more that I saw other blogs in other areas start to be monetized, like, political blogs, like Instapundit. And I didn't think it was a bad idea. And I think the decision whether to monetize your blog or to accept sponsors, it's a very personal decision, obviously. And no matter what you do, I think there's always going to be part of the population who would rather not see ads on my blog, just like people don't want to see pharmaceutical ads in the New England Journal of Medicine.
Right.
They're there. So I'm comfortable with the decision, and I certainly appreciate and I understand that there is a significant amount of people who would rather not see ads on KevinMD, but I certainly respect that, but certainly it's a personal decision and it's something that I'm comfortable with.
Are there certain companies that approach you saying, hey, I would never put this ad or anyone from this industry or anything like that on your blog?
There are a couple of ones that I refuse, and I certainly screen all the potential advertisers that come on my blog. The question of whether I would accept pharmaceutical ads, I probably, it's difficult to say. So far I haven't, and I have rebuffed a few. Just because I've spoken many times on direct-to-consumer marketing, and if I accepted a pharmaceutical ad, it would appear hypocritical. So right now I won't accept pharmaceutical advertising, but most of the advertisers that I take, I think they are for my targeted demographic. I think I have you know, iMed Exchange and EMR sponsor, and I think that the people who would read my blog, it is the right demographic for those type of advertisers.
And I've read or I've heard on maybe a podcast appearance that you've made in the past is that a lot of this that you get from sponsorship does fund things like your bandwidth, because I would imagine that you have huge bandwidth or servers or just your tech support.
Yeah, it's really. I'm not going to quit my day job because of it. It's really bandwidth and disk space cost at a server. Those are really the kind of maintenance cost at a blog that my sponsorship covers.
So are you truly a one-man show? I mean, do you do your own server? Do you have people helping you, or how does that work?
I do most of it myself into the day-to-day things. I did contract out a few things. I think that if you're serious into blogging, you have to have some kind of custom template, because I think that having a pre-done template is probably, you need to set it apart. So I did contract out to get a template. And then I do a lot of search engine optimization to build readership for the blog. So I did hire a professional to go through my Blogger template to optimize it for Google. But other than those two things, I have a lot of readers who email me tips, and I appreciate that. When I'm gone on vacation, one of MedGadget's editors, Josh Umber, he is a family practice resident in Kansas, I believe, and he helps me out, helps guest blog when I'm gone. But the day-to-day things is primarily me.
And this is a question I get a lot too. I mean, with respect to sponsorship and things, do you think sponsorship affects the credibility of your blog?
I'm sure that there are some people that say that it will. I can just speak for myself that I've never changed a blog post or deleted a blog post specifically because of sponsor pressure. And I certainly understand that there are some people who think that I'm selling out, or if my credibility is somewhat less if I didn't have any sponsors, and that's fine. And I certainly understand where they're coming from, but I don't think that it harms their credibility, because people read what I write and know where I come from, and I don't think having ads on the site really would change that.
Yeah, that's something that I struggle with, because I've been approached. I mean, anyone who has a blog has been approached, but certainly I don't have the volume of visitors that you have. But I go through this every few weeks, as far as should I put ads on my blog? Should I not put ads on my blog? Should I make a post about something? People will contact me all the time about, well, this is a book that I wrote, and I'd like to come on your show, and I'd like to, if you can blog about my book, I really appreciate it. So that's something I've been kind of going back and forth on as well, and of course there's no right answer, and it's certainly everybody's comfort level on what they do, but and I guess I really haven't answered the question yet, as far as being accepting sponsors on my blog. I guess I would. I mean, I'd probably want to wait until I get more readers, because that would probably be better on both sides, as far as for the advertiser and for myself to try to do that.
I think that if you're 50-50, or if you're on the fence on advertisers, I probably won't do it, just because you just don't want that guilt, and you don't. I think that if you have that guilt, I think it's going to affect your blogging. So I think that if you decide to do sponsorship, you should be like 100% into it. You should go all the way. And if you do choose that route, really the key is building traffic. And if you build enough traffic, people will come to you. You don't really have to do any soliciting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'd like to touch back on another point we talked about before. Is as far as this whole Dr. Flea episode.
He's back in the news this week.
Yeah, and I've been interviewing people on the show, I just been trying to get their take on what they thought of that whole situation. And I know you had a pretty comprehensive post on trying to gather some of the links and some of the other what other people were writing back at that time. But when that whole thing was unfolding, what were you kind of thinking when you kind of saw that and when you were reading other med bloggers talking about this situation?
Yeah, I think it just, I think the blogs that interviewed Dr. Flea this week and kind of got his retrospective on that, I think it was very illuminating. I think he was saying how, writing for doctors is inherently dangerous, and it's unfair to the profession. That why are physician writers like targets when they write? And he wrote something to that effect. And in a way, he's right. I think that first off, physician blogging is a relatively new niche. I think when mainstream media first found out about it, the first thing they asked was, what about the privacy issues? It was almost attacked by mainstream media. So I think that there is a certain danger and certain vulnerability when physicians write, and they can appear as targets. That being said, during that whole week when Flea took down his blog, I took down 10 to 20 posts where I talked about patients and cases kind of earlier on in my blog, just because I didn't want any of that to come back and bite me in whatever scenario. I also hired a healthcare lawyer to craft that disclaimer for me. Just it was a little bit overboard, but after seeing what happened that week, I have to admit I did get a little bit scared about the whole episode. But I think that's all calmed down, and I think that physician blogging is much more in the mainstream now. And I think as people know it better and know what we can do and are more comfortable with it, I think that it would be easier for us to write.
Yeah, I think all of us who are physician bloggers took a look at every single one of our posts when that happened. And I know I took about 4 or 5 down around that time as well. And back at that time when everybody was writing about it, people were concerned. I mean, even I wrote about it too, about the long-term effects of this situation. So I guess we're just kind of waiting to see how it all kind of plays out. I mean, during right around that time in the next 3 or 4 months after that, I mean, you would see more and more blogs taken down or made private. From your feeling right now, that it had more short-term effects than you think than physician blogging as far as long-term effects?
No, I think in terms of long-term effects, believe it or not, I think that there was some positives that came out of it. I think that it made physicians very wary about HIPAA and privacy, and this made them more conscious about what they write. Like, they can't just, write about anything. I know there may be some who are so frustrated with the medical system and just kind of start ranting about it. But I think that the Flea episode shows that there has to be, limits. There has to be a little bit of a filter, or else it can come back and haunt you. And I think that it's forced a lot of the physician bloggers to be more responsible in terms of what they write and really remember that patient privacy is the number one priority if they do choose a blog about cases and patients.
Well, let's move on here. I wanted to talk to you about you have a lot of exposure on mainstream media outlets, and I know a lot of med bloggers are very excited about that you're out there, telling the public and telling the media that physicians blog and it's not all about complaining, and we want to advocate for our own issues as well. Do you remember your first interviews or specifically about medical blogging and kind of how you dealt with that?
Yeah, my first interview was with my local paper, the Nashville Telegraph, and it was, I'll be honest, it was a way that I wanted to build my practice because I was relatively new to the area, and I thought I had something unique because at that time physician blogging was pretty nascent and, in its very beginnings, and, here I was having a blog, and I didn't know very many other local physicians who had one, so I thought it would be a good hook for a story that, hey, I was a doctor who blogged. So I contacted one of the reporters, and they did a very nice story and kind of a front-page story, to my surprise, and I think that you know, it all started from there. And then, you know, the other local papers kind of also did some writing, and some of the larger national publications kind of picked up on that. So it kind of snowballed from there. And I think that my blog is, you know, is definitely giving me opportunities, obviously, that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And I'm going to try to use that to communicate to non-physicians and the public some of the things that we face. Because let's face it, you know, we go to CERMO and IMED Exchange and, you know, these doctor-only lounges. You know, they're great sites, and, you know, I visit it every day and see the conversations. But when doctors bitch to each other, really, it doesn't really solve anything, you know.
Right.
You know, you and I, we both know what's going on. And
sure.
I think in order to get change, you have to communicate that to the public. Because when the public, and you know, when the public hears about some of, you know, doctors talking about reimbursement, you know, their first thought is this is a rich profession that's complaining again, and
right.
and it's really more than that. And I think trying to get them to understand some of the issues that we're facing is going to be important, because there is a primary care shortage. There are like ER waits, and these are in the news every day. And you know, it's sad to say that our problems are going to become their problems very, very soon. And
mm-hmm.
I think that
mm-hmm.
force enough, like, you know, expressing that opinion and using the blog and mainstream media as a vehicle to express that is something that I think that I can do to make a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, I mean, in medical school or in residency, I mean, you know, we've never had any kind of, you know, PR classes, or this is how you talk to the press, or this is how you write a letter to whomever. What advice would you have for physicians who, you know, who really want to try to make a change and really want to reach out to their media, whether it's a radio station or a newspaper or a television station, to get the ball rolling to try to get the message out?
Yeah, I didn't have any formal training either, so I think a lot of it is kind of like learning on the fly. You know, when CBS Evening News came, you know, I was, you know, I didn't really know what to expect. I actually emailed Nick Jeans because I don't know if you know, he was on CBS Evening News talking about a story, and I asked him about the experience. And I also, you know, there's some articles that you can find on Google on how to appear media savvy and how to answer these questions. So I think the more you do it, obviously, the more comfortable you get. Regarding opinion articles, op-eds, that's something I'm trying to get into. I'm actually saving a lot of my original writing for op-eds rather than for my blog, just because, you know, I do get some traffic on my blog, but not nearly the amount, you know, that would read my stuff if I was published in an opinion page in a newspaper. So, you know, I think that there are guides and tutorials that you can Google. You know, if you just Google how to write an op-ed, you know, it gives you kind of a step-by-step thing and who to submit it to, how to write it, what to look out for. And, you know, I think I just did a lot of trial and error. I contacted local reporters and, you know, let them know that I have a story that I'm, you know, interested in saying, and some say no, and some are interested. And I think that you have to have an interest in it. But you know, if you don't try, you just never know.
Our guest is Kevin MD from KevinMD.com, and you can join the conversation as well. Our number here is 646-716-9514. Yeah, I mean, it's at least around here in Ohio. I mean, I know it's set in different parts of the country at different times, but when we had our malpractice crisis here, I know at least the local physicians here kind of mobilized, if for anything else, to educate the patients and saying, you know, this is why these physicians, you know, are leaving the area, or because we're in a small town here, you know, we don't have a big university center. We have a small community hospital, and back at that time, we had a string of specialists who left the area and left a lot of need for patient care here, and a lot of the patients, you know, were saying, well, you know, this doctor's being selfish, that doctor's being selfish, they're not making enough money. And we'll say, no, that's not really not what's going on. Is this is what's happening. This is what liability means. This is what malpractice means.
Yeah.
And
no, I completely agree. I think physicians need to have better public relations skills, to be honest, because really it comes down to communicating with the patients our views. But just take a look at this story that's been going on the last couple of days, that forced rectal story in the New York emergency room, where that patient is suing the hospital for forcing the rectal on him. And it's become a huge debate on, you know, patients' rights activists versus, you know, emergency room and trauma physicians. And I think if we express to the patients why we would do what we do, why informed consent is not always clear-cut in head trauma cases, I think if we explain that, I think the public would have a better understanding of, you know, why we do the things that we do, and be more a little bit more sympathetic to our viewpoint. And I think that, you know, that's one of the things I find that are missing. I think when physicians do things, there's very little public sympathy for our causes, and I think that we need to work on that.
And this kind of leads into kind of the last area that I kind of want to touch with you on is kind of building up this interview is you know, how do you see the medical blogosphere or people blogging or, you know, physician med bloggers, you know, really trying to be influential, not only on a local level where politics is local, but even expanding out to a national level, even maybe having an effect on the U.S. presidential election?
No, I think, you know, doing what we're doing is fantastic. I think the growth of the blogosphere, I think, I don't know how many medical blogs there are now. It must be, you know, a couple thousand, and that's way up from a couple years ago. And I think that we're getting the attention of mainstream media. You look at the major newspapers, the Wall Street Journal, Boston Globe, New York Times, they all have their own health blogs, and I can guarantee that they read our health blogs because, you know, they link and they quote directly from other bloggers. So I think we've captured the attention of mainstream media, and I think that we've become a force. And, you know, the more that we grow and the more that our message is conveyed through the media, I think the more influence and clout that we have. And, you know, I'm happy with the way the blogosphere is growing. I know that a lot of other bloggers, you know, they write op-eds too. They're, you know, on TV and in the media and expressing the message. So I think that, you know, but I think the blog itself, you know, it's not going to do it. But you got to use the blog as a hook to catch on to a kind of a louder sounding board where more people can hear your message.
I think we have a caller.
All right.
Stay here. Hello.
Hello, it's Dr. Val from our nation's capital.
Oh, hi, Dr. Val. Right on cue.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Welcome to the show, Dr. Val.
Thank you so much. The folks in the chat room teased me into calling, and I said I didn't want to wear out my welcome, but I couldn't resist because, Kevin, you're a Canadian.
I am, yes.
I didn't realize that. I can hear you say a boat.
Oh, I got teased mercilessly during my freshman year about a boat and all that. But I think I've been here long enough. My Canadian accent is gone. I saw from the chat room you're from the Maritimes.
That's right. I grew up just outside of Halifax, actually.
Oh, excellent.
And I notice you do say a boat, but you don't say a. So I think you've managed to root that out.
I've rooted that out, although I didn't really say it very much back when I was in Canada. But, you know, a lot of my friends do. But good to hear from a fellow Canadian.
That's right. Rock on. This is awesome. Really exciting. You have a very diverse and multicultural group here, people from India, South Africa, Canada, the United States. Really exciting, Dr.
I know.
A.
This chat room is very, it's like basically from all the time zones in the world here. It's in this chat room right now.
That's right. Now, Kevin, I have to out Dr. A and Nick Jeans because they were joking in our previous podcast about wearing a single-payer T-shirt on the video.
Did you hear that? I was listening to Nick Jeans' archives last week, and I was ready for that.
How did you prepare yourself, I wonder?
I was ready with all these retorts, you know, and, you know, getting my free market cap ready, you know.
You don't have any hecklers tonight. Do you feel sort of...
I'm surprised.
Out of sorts?
I was ready for the onslaught of attackers and my critics to come and take their shots at me, you know. So
that's right. Well, they're obviously wimps.
I'm happy that I'm talking to you. So
that's right. That's right. The Canadians are the tough ones here.
Well, Nick contacted me, and he said he was working, so I don't know if he was just chickening out or, you know, not wanting to face up to Kevin MD, so I'm not sure. Well, I'll have to follow up with him on that.
Yeah, you know, he heckled me a little bit, Dr. A, in the last one. And I just thought you should probably stand up for your groupies, you know what I mean?
Oh, I know. Well, you know, I...
He said, it's Dr. Val and the crickets out there. I was like, hey! In the chat room.
I kind of wanted to forget the last show because we kind of took shots at a lot of people on the last show. if people listened to the whole thing,
that last show went on and on. I was listening to the archives, and you know,
I just want to apologize for that show. And
well, you know, it was a lot of testosterone. What could you do? You really needed a little breath of estrogen there at the end to sort of even things out a bit. So I hope I've shared a little of that with you tonight, and I thank you so much for your time, and it was really exciting getting to talk to you, Kevin.
Thank you.
So maybe someone else will call in and speak up and let their voice be heard.
Yeah, Val, get back in there and try to coax somebody into
I'll do my best.
At least make fun of me or something, you know.
I will. Thanks so much, guys.
Okay. All right, take care, Dr. Val.
Bye.
So yeah, I mean, I saw on your blog today you're ready to take the shots, you know, and I'm sure you intimidated everybody.
Plenty of people that don't agree with what I say, and you know, there are some that feel that I don't pull the curtain back far enough, and you know, it's tough because you know, on one hand, I do want to expose what's you know, what's going on, kind of you know, what goes on behind the scenes. But you know, there has to be a little bit of a limit and a filter to that because you know, I don't want, you know, I have a young family to raise, I have my career, I don't want, you know, the blog to be the end of that. You know, I know that how some other physicians' careers are derailed because of their blog. So I think that, you know, there has to be a little bit of balance to that.
I mean, it's been interesting. I've been doing this show. Is that, I mean, there's I don't know if it's perceived or whatever. I mean, there's all this mystery behind medical bloggers and you know, and how they write and the style that they write, and you get them on the show here, and it's very different. It's been a really interesting experience doing the show here and just talking with people and having a conversation with them. And I did read your post last week on you know, why I blog, and I thought that was fascinating. You get letters like that a lot from patients and saying, hey, just thank you for bringing up these issues. You broke through some myths that I didn't know about.
I get those letters occasionally, but that was, you know, kind of like, you know, if I were to write that letter myself, that's what I'd write.
Right.
It was so perfect. Like it was so gratifying to see that, you know, that some of the themes and the message is getting through to someone. And just reading that, and you know, I asked that person if I can, you know, obviously publish her letter on my blog, and it was just so gratifying to see that you know, patients, you know, read my blog and kind of, you know, see things through a different perspective, and you know, it just really it was nice to see, and you know, that is definitely one of the major reasons why I'm going to continue to blog.
Now, last week, I mean, as you heard, I mean, you know, I did take some shots at, you know, at CIRMO and those type of groups. So, what's your take on CIRMO and those type of physician groups? Do you think they'll have a real advocacy role for physician issues, or is it just mainly like a clinical type meeting place?
No, I think that I love CIRMO and CIRMO, you know, that I think it does play a role, and I think that, you know, it's definitely growing, and a lot of the, I think it's definitely more than the clinical side. I think that if physicians were ever to unionize or unite against, you know, against the powers that be, I think it would be a place like CIRMO where it would start, because I think it's it has all the tools to get doctors together, bring them together, and really fight for you know, what's wrong with American healthcare today. There, right now, as it stands, there's just so many different groups. You know, there's the American College of Physicians, there's the AMA, and there's the American College of Surgery, and they're all kind of fighting for their own special interests. But there really isn't one group to kind of unite everyone, because you know, when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, we're all really on the same team here.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just kind of analyzing the situation. I mean, it's just. I see CIRMO really having an opportunity to to make that statement with this election cycle if they wanted to choose to go that way?
I think the one thing that, you know, it's a doctor's only site. So, you know, I see that, you know, as on one hand, it allows doctors to express their opinions freely, but really it's behind closed doors. And I think that if there's a way that the public can kind of really understand why we're doing and why we're saying what we're saying, I think that would be immeasurably more helpful. And that's where I think that, you know, blogs can come in, because the blogs do provide that insight that these other closed social networks don't have.
In kind of analyzing this national presidential race, kind of what are you seeing as the main, as far as healthcare issues? Do you think healthcare is the number one domestic issue that will be talked about in this election?
Well, the surveys say the economy has overtaken it, but I think it's one of the most important issues, if not the, you know, the number one issue. You know, as you could imagine, you know, a couple weeks ago, it was really primary mania here in New Hampshire. You really couldn't cross the street without running into a presidential candidate in Nashua. So it was really on the forefront. And, you know, on the head-to-head surveys, you know, I think that it's most likely that a Democratic contender would win. And the unfortunate thing is that I think they're focusing on the wrong thing. I think that Obama, Hillary, and John Edwards, they're focused on the uninsured and their universal plans. But I think that as Massachusetts is finding out, you know, they have an individual mandate universal health care plan, and really there's not enough primary care physicians and doctors to take care of these newly insured patients. And, you know, I wrote a piece on this, is that without doctors, it doesn't matter if you have universal health care, because universal healthcare doesn't mean access. And I think that's really the biggest thing that's missing from a lot of the arguments that I hear from the presidential candidates. If they can tackle the primary care reimbursement system, you know, something that can, you know, get me inspired of getting to the root of the problem, I think that I'd be much more encouraged.
Okay. Something I'm curious about is how's your day set up as far as your practice and then blogging? How do you fit all that in? I mean, I know there's not a typical day, but do you kind of have a schedule on when you put your posts together and put your blogs together? And
yeah, it's a pretty long day. I do some surfing in the morning when I wake up. It's about 5:30 or so, and I spend an hour browsing through my feeds and Google Reader and kind of tagging the posts that I like to post, and then I guess I sporadically post them during the day, and then during lunch, while I'm eating, I again kind of go through the sites and again tag the things I want to post and do a lot of drafts, and then I'll release them throughout the day, and then at night, you know, again I do another quick scan of the blogs, you know, depending on the time. But you're right, it does make for a long day, and I think that there's a certain amount of commitment there, because I wouldn't advise physicians to blog if they didn't have the time or weren't committed to it, because it does take out a significant part of a time during the day. But, you know, like I said before, it does have its rewards, and it's something that I'll definitely continue to do.
How many blogs do you scan during the course? I mean, like on your blog roll, how many is on your blog roll?
I haven't kept count. It's probably between 50 and 70. I think I do that feeds page that I have. That's the first page that I look at every day, and that's where I get my stories from.
Okay.
From the blogs, and then I do Google Reader, maybe like 100 sources there, and then I would do keyword searches on blog search on Google. Like I do keyword searches for doctor, health, malpractice, so I can see what other blogs are writing about those specific topics, and then Google Reader is a great thing. I can just scan through, you know, hundreds of sources pretty quickly. But the blogs that are on my feeds page, those are the ones that get the most attention, because that's the first one to look at every day. And if Dr. Val's in the room, I've been keep meaning to put her blog on the feeds, because I think her blog is a great blog, but for some reason her feeds is kind of overloads the system that I'm using. So that's the reason why her blog is not on my feeds page otherwise. So her blog would be there too. So I have to check hers manually.
Well, so she blows up your system.
Basically, blows it out with too much good content.
That's right. You know, she has so much good stuff that it just crashes the whole thing.
What? Her RSS feed is too much information. It overloads what I can do with whatever system I'm using. So everything else, but that's the page that I look at the most.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's your opinion of video? Do you really see med blogs really picking up video blogging? Or
I think you've got that market cornered so far with your video blogs. I think what you're doing here is great with with the Blog Talk Radio, and you're doing some video, and I think that I think that's great. And there are actually a lot of sites that kind of have a YouTube for doctors feel, like there's a I don't remember them off the top of my head, but there are on, I think, iMed Exchange, there's like some features where you can do some video blogging, and I think that's great. And the AMA News, like some doctors who embed in their emails to patients, test result things. So I think that really gives it a nice high-tech personal touch. So I think that there definitely is a future for that. Streaming video, it's all kind of the next generation of internet tools that doctors can use.
Yeah, I read that article on American Medical News, and that's a fascinating next step, I guess, because there's been a lot of written about email communication or patients logging into a password-protected site to get test results. So I really see that in the next few years as far as hopefully physicians would utilize that, but I know that you've spoken on your blog a number of times how slow the industry of medicine or even physicians are to embrace some of these technologies.
No, absolutely. I think that the fact that only a minority of physician offices have EMRs, that's just really a travesty. And I know some of the doctors who are just getting into email. So I think that medicine is always kind of a generation slower than what's currently going on. So I think that, give it a few years. I think, blogging and these other, so-called health 2.0 technologies, I think it's going to take flight. And I think it's just a matter of making it easy, because time is at a premium for physicians. And if you just make things easy for doctors, and if there's an incentive for them to use it, they'll adopt it, and just give them a few years.
And my final question for you tonight is, I did want to ask you about your MedBlog Power 8 on your blog. How did you come up with that concept?
Well, I just wanted a regular feature to use some of my traffic and share it with the other blogs. And, I'll be honest, it's a completely arbitrary system. When I say that it's completely subjective, it is completely subjective. The way I do it is I see who was previously on the Power 8, and I kind of look through their week of posts, and if they've been posting frequently, if their posts are compelling, and I'd keep them on, and if they've taken some time off or whatnot, then I'd remove them and add on new blogs. I try to add on two to three new blogs every week on it just to give them some exposure, but it's just a completely arbitrary system to spread some of the traffic around and give some of the lesser-known blogs some support.
Okay. Well, great. And you've been doing that, I think, 3-4 months now, or has it been that long?
Yeah, it's been about, I've changed it a few. I think that at first I wrote more, a little bit of a commentary, kind of like, those football polls you get every Sunday about the college. So I try to model it after that. But then right now I just do it with the name of the blog and then kind of a post of note, and then I just post it every 1 to 2 days. And from what I hear, that people are pretty to get a slight boost in traffic, and I think that's great. I think that I try to spread some of my traffic around. I think that everyone benefits.
Oh, well, great. Anything you forgot? Anything else that you wanted to talk about tonight? Do you have any questions for me?
I just wanted to thanks for letting me on the show. I think what you're doing here is great. If I don't listen live, I listen on the archives, and I think that. Really going behind the blog, that's really kind of a unique idea, and I think you're doing a great job, and I think it definitely fills a void here in the medical blogosphere.
Well, great. Yeah, well, thank you for being on the show. Yeah, I'd love to bring you back. Maybe we'll bring you back and have people just yell at you for a show or something like that.
Sure. I was ready for people to bring it on, and no critics, but hey, that's all right.
Maybe the next year I'll bring you on, I'll have a contest or something.
Okay, I know.
take your best shot at Kevin.
The worst, exactly, because I was out, but you know that's okay too. You know, it was a nice hour.
Well, great. Go. Thank you for being on the show, and thank you for all you do. You know, it was great having you on the show, and you're definitely one of my daily reads. So keep up the great work, and I hope to bring you back on the show soon.
Well, fantastic. And again, thanks for the opportunity, and I'd love to come on again.
Great. Well, we'll talk soon. Thank you very much.
Okay, take care, Dr. A.
Thank you. All right, boys and girls, that was Kevin, MD, you know, and when I first started this show, you know, I have to tell you that I would never think I'd get Kevin, MD on this show, and that was a great interview. That asked all the questions that I've ever wanted to ask. So thank you for Kevin, MD, for being on the show. I do want to thank Dr. Val for calling in the show. Yes, Dr. Val, I will try to defend your honor as a supporter for this show next time that happens. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I really try my best. So thank you for everybody in the chat room. I'm sorry I really feel bad about the chat room because I get so distracted, doing these interviews, and I really don't see what's going on in the chat room. So maybe I'll try to work on that. That will be my New Year's resolution to everybody in the chat room. I will try to pay attention to more of what's going on in there. So thank you for listening to the show. You can find me at dranonymous.com, and you can always hear me live or on the archives at blogtalkradio.com/dranonymous. Our next show will be Sunday night, January 20th at 9 p.m. We'll be bringing the MedGadget guys back, so look out for those guys. We may have some special guests, too, so closing up the polls for the MedGadget MedBlog Awards. Next week in this time slot, will be Dr. Wes. He's at drwes.blogspot.com, so you can't miss that. So thanks, everybody, for joining the show. I'll be in the chat room after the show, so look out over there. So thanks for listening to the show. I am Dr. Anonymous, and I'm a blogaholic. Have a good night. We'll see you later.